Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show.
Danny Mac and Dan Parker Show.
Yes.
Afternoons on the Score.
Kelly's birthday today? Where's Kelly? Are we all going to sing? Are we all going to sing? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Kelly. Happy birthday to you. Yay. 20, where are we at? 21.
21
for us. Okay, nice. Well done. Happy birthday.
That was a moment, and it happens. Joe Maddon cannot carry a tune to save his life, but a hell of a gesture from the Cubs manager to our next guest. The terrific reporter for NBC Sports Chicago covers the Bulls, but for now she's in Cubs camp with the Chicago Cubs, and it's been an interesting start to Cubs camp. I'm guessing that's a moment you'll remember for a long time, Kelly Kroll, and happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I don't know how you can top Joe Maddon singing happy birthday to you. I think that's definitely going to stay at the top of my list, if you will, for serenades. And Joe, and Trisley, I don't know if you could tell, I don't know if you saw the video, but I was kind of embarrassed by it. Mark Gonzalez, who of course we know, tremendous writer for the Tribune, sort of tipped him off that it was my birthday, and that was really unexpected. So I didn't really know how to handle it, but it was awesome, very special. The birthday as a whole, the entire day was incredible. It's really wonderful when you get to be out, you know, in Arizona, spend it with some colleagues who treat you like family. And Joe made it extra special. So, and that's quite the intro now for me with you guys. You want to hang on to that one? I'll keep that one.
Oh, just every time you come on the show, it's got to be your birthday?
Yes. Just be my birthday every time.
Yeah, you're like my wife. She's like, it's a birthday month. It's a birthday quarter. I thought your media brethren kind of left Joe hanging a little bit. They made him sing all by himself.
I know. I thought the same thing. We actually were given a hard time to, like, Sahadov, who was to my left. And I was like, buddy, I couldn't hear you. Couldn't hear you pipe up. Yeah, I don't know if we've got a whole lot of singers in this group, but Joe did a pretty nice job carrying it himself, I thought.
But Joe's the only one with a microphone, so of course it's going to outweigh the voices of Sahana Sharma.
Speak
and everyone
up, Bruce
else.
Levine! Come on, carry a tune.
You know, we just needed the Catman in there. He would have been loud and proud. I know it.
That's not what we needed.
better birthday without him.
Kelly Kroll from NBC Chicago is our guest. It's been a. It's been an odd start to Cubs camp, Kelly. How would you characterize it?
Yeah, that's a good word. Odd, different, uncomfortable. Is that a fair word? We've been here almost 2 weeks, or most people have been here. I took off, of course, once the Bulls hit the All-Star break, but it's been a lot of talk outside of baseball. We've gotten to discuss the actual game very little, and instead it's been a lot of the off-the-field distractions and such that has taken the headlines, and so I'll be glad when we get back to just talking about baseball. So, and that's unusual, like you said. It's just been unusual to start things off that way for this team.
One of the things has been leadership or perceived leadership and a change in that this year. What have you seen early on your first few days down in Arizona that's different than camps past?
Well, yeah, that's been a hot topic is leadership. Of course, it's something we heard Joe, Theo, Jed, all of them mentioned towards the end of the year, how the leaders of this team need to step up and be those leaders. I've noticed already John Lester and Cole Hamels have been very open about how they've talked to Joe, they've talked to others, and I'm really excited. I'm going to be doing a feature with John Lester here in the next couple days, and that's something I want to ask him about and continue the conversation, because if anything, why not reach out to David Ross, right? That was something that happened so organically and naturally for him. And sure, John Lester's not the same guy, but when he speaks, everyone listens. And that's the same with Cole Hamels. And I think those two want to take more of a vocal leadership role. And so I'll be curious to see how that kind of unfolds. But I've already seen him being more conversational and more engaged this early in camp. As you guys know, a lot of the times those veteran pitchers especially, they kind of walk to their own beat during camp. They know where they need to be. They know what they need to be doing and how they need to be feeling each day. And so I think sometimes they, I don't want to say on purpose, but they almost isolate themselves in a way. And that's not what I've seen this year so far. I've definitely seen a very engaged John Lester, and you would expect Cole Hamels. He's just excited to be starting the spring with this team and the team he had so much success with in the back half of last season. So those two in particular, and then Anthony Rizzo was asked about it today, and he made a good point. There's a lot of individual leaders on the team, but they've got to figure out how to bring that together and have more or less one voice, if that makes sense. So that's my early thoughts from out here. Is I'm seeing two of the veteran pitchers on this staff. That's a tricky play, though, right? They're guys that take the mound once every 5 days versus the everyday guy. So we'll see how that kind of evolves as things move forward.
Well, and it's a teaching an old dog new tricks type of thing,
sure.
Right? Like Joe Maddon's done it one way for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's in his mid 60s, and then they're like, be more, have more urgency, be more hands on. When all he would talk about is, it's fine, 2 out of 3, hands off, everything's cool. And John Lester, gruff, not as approachable. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, Be the chatty, rah-rah leader guy. Like, can the leopard change its spots, or is it going to come off as fake?
Yeah, I don't know. And time will tell with that. But I do think that they both are looking at it, all of them in a way, as a new challenge. This isn't something that comes naturally, like we're saying, to John Lester to be that more vocal and rah-rah guy, and with Joe Maddon. I think there is something for him that is more natural to getting back and coaching more. I mean, he's discussed with us how he's looking forward to getting back to doing some of the things he has done in the past and be more involved when it comes to the offense and hitting and coaching up the coaches, which for the first time since I've been here, this is my sixth spring training with this team. The first time I saw him a couple days ago, have all of the coaches together and spend a good 30 to 45 minutes talking to them and all. I mean, I know they're always on the same page, but maybe discussing more how they were going to go about the drills and instructionals and everything that they're going to be doing out here, and then the tone that they want to set. So that's the first time I've seen that from Joe Maddon. But yeah, if nothing else, it's maybe if you're, you know, from a Cubs fan perspective, you're glad that you're hearing these guys say this is a challenge they're wanting to take on and wanting to do. So we'll see. Yeah, you're right, though, Danny. They've been doing this a long time, and they've been doing it their way a long time. So it's going to be a little tricky to see if they can kind of spin things around and do it a little differently.
Chris Bryant, the health of his shoulder will be monitored, I'm sure, and written about all spring long. What are the early returns from him, from others? What's being said about the health of him?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, Nick, because he said probably 4 different times today during his, 7 to 10 minute session with the media, when asked about his shoulder, probably in 3 or 4 different ways. He was like, I feel good. I feel great. Shoulder's not something we need to talk about. I feel awesome. And he drug out the word awesome and said it 2 or 3 different ways. I don't think he feels like he can say anything more at this point other than I've told you over and over again, I feel great. I can't wait to get going. And he also mentioned just different things that he'd been able to do this off season because of the extra month that they all keep talking about and the longevity. I'll tell you who else looks great. I mean, Chris looks great. He does look like he's worked on his upper body a little bit. I also think it should be noted that Anthony Rizzo showed up looking, I think, slimmer in a good way. You can tell he's put in a lot of work as well. And one of the things he mentioned was flexibility. And that leads me to believe he's doing things, and this is just my own, I'm taking this. This is not something Anthony and I haven't been able to talk about yet, but I think that has something to do with the back issues that have flared up on him in the past. I think he's probably doing something different to try and prevent that going into this season. But back to Chris Bryant, he's had a chance to be working in the cage more than he Danny did in years past, and of course working with his dad. And I think that when we get to see him out here today, they didn't get to do a whole lot, guys. And I haven't seen, honestly, Bryant hit in a cage since I got out here. So I'd hate to speak to what I have seen from him yet, because it's been very little. But I am anxious to see that because of how strongly he has stated how good he feels and that he thinks he's hitting as you know, well as he has at any point in this time of the year in any other season. So yeah, we'll see this week, and hopefully tomorrow we get some better weather out here. I don't want to complain. I know what you guys are dealing with back there in Chicago, but it hasn't been real great for them out here either. Lots of rain and pretty chilly temperatures for Arizona standards.
Yeah, we're playing the world's smallest violin for you. This hour,
I know.
just be warm the week we're out there. That's really all we care about, to be honest.
Okay, I'll try to get that done for you guys.
This hour on The Score brought to you by the Chicago Golf Show, featuring special guest Robbie Gould. For tickets, go to chicagogolfshow.com. We're talking to Cubs reporter from NBC Chicago, Kelly Kroll. So you mentioned earlier when we were talking about the press conferences, you know, the off-field distraction. And I know that that's just something that the media attaches to it because we're asking questions that aren't about baseball. But baseball players have a pretty good ability to do tunnel vision. But these topics have been racism, Islamophobia, media distribution deals, domestic violence, racism within ownership ranks. Like, these are heavy, meaty.
Heavy.
Yeah. Have you noticed any actual signs of players being distracted by them, or is it just an unusual line of questioning?
Yeah, that's it. The second, the latter there. It's the questioning that's different. I think once these guys, you know, once they move us out of the clubhouse and these guys go hit the field, I don't think they're talking about it amongst themselves as much anymore. You know, I think it's just having to answer the questions that usually are baseball questions. Instead, they're having to tiptoe around and very carefully think about how they're going to respond to what are, as you said, very heavy, meaty, important decisions and topics and issues that the conversations do need to be had. But I don't know that these guys find that as something that's easy or natural for them to be talking about. It's not. It's hard for all of us. It's hard on every person who is involved in this, I think, and that should be stated, right? This is not easy, I don't think, on media members to be asking the question. I don't think it's easy on the players. I don't think it's easy on the front offices, and certainly not easy on the people who are the victims in these situations. So it's just all around, it's been emotionally draining, if I can say that. I walked away after the Addison Russell press conference and listening to the responses, and we took it live on NBC Sports Chicago. So, you know, getting to read people who are watching and their thoughts on it. And I just, at the end of that day, Danny, honestly, I walked away thinking, I'm spent. This it takes a toll on everyone involved.
And with this, like, yeah, it obviously it is an exhausting thing to discuss, to have to write about all of that. Now that Tom Ricketts has spoken, Addison Russell has met the media, you had Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer, and Joe Maddon meet the media at the end of last week. What's the shelf life on the rest of this story through camp? Does it go away now and it's rediscovered or re-brought up again around opening day? Or now what kind of happens with the off-the-field type stories?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I don't think you keep coming back and asking this day in and day out. I think that once the initial topic, issue, conversation has happened, I think, you know, we write about it, we report on it, and then you hope to be watching what is them moving forward from it. Now, I don't get me wrong, I definitely think that we will be keeping a very close eye on Addison Russell throughout all of camp. I think it probably, you know, absolutely, he will be under the microscope in terms of, and I've already had people asking, you know, how does he look out there when he's with his teammates? Does it appear as though, you know, it's the same? Is it any different? And from a workout perspective, once he hits the field, it's about what you've always seen. I mean, you see him talking to some guys and you see him going to work. So I think, though, that we'll continue to watch that. And I know that I will be at times continuing to touch base and ask him how he's doing with these steps and the process that he is looking to take. I'd like to follow up with a few things that weren't asked at that press conference the other day. And then
like
the same
what?
With, Well, you know, he mentioned, for instance, that he's in touch with his counselor and he's got more than one. I'd like to have a better idea of how often he's in touch with his counselor. I mean, is this something that every time he runs into somebody who says something to him that, you know, how is he dealing with his feelings and how will he continue to deal with those feelings? And then, you know, in turn, those feelings are what he was not able to handle in the way that he would have liked to, in the way that I think any of us would have liked him to. So where is the growth coming from? In other words, is what I want to continue to talk to him about and hear from him. Do you think that's fair, Danny? I mean, what did you hear that you would have liked to have heard more of?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely fair. And the thing that I was left feeling
wondering,
that was lacking from that press conference were obviously specifics, but he clearly was not interested in getting into specifics.
Right.
But what about the causation part of it? Like there was a lot of talk about what he will be doing in the future, but there wasn't a lot of talk of like, why did this happen? What's the root of your anger issue? Is this alcohol related? You know, like what are you still drinking? You know, like those types of things to me would be somewhat illuminating because now they are fair game. They're not fair game for a player that has had no indiscretions. It's none of our business. But when he's been suspended 40 games under the domestic violence policy and Melissa Reedy puts out all of those details that he doesn't choose to dispute, then all of a sudden there's a public safety component attached to it, right? Like the Cubs have – they're employing someone who could be a danger to the community at large. So I think that there's an obligation's maybe a slight stretch, but there should be a journalistic attempt to understand the root cause of what's happening. And he can obviously demur and deflect, but that was the thing that I thought was lacking from the Russell press conference.
Yeah, and to go into that, I guess one of the things I would say, there was a question – and it might have been Bruce Levine who asked. I don't remember, so I don't want to put anyone on. There was a question to the effect of, do you know where this stems from? Oftentimes, these issues come from people who have grown up in an unhealthy environment. And I think the question was trying to get to, was this something you were in an environment growing up that may have led to this? And really, I think Russell has absolutely been coached to not go there, to not mention those things. Those are things that probably stay between he and his now counselors, and they work on them. And so I hear what you're saying, and at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if that's an answer we never really get to hear. But I think that it is important what he said about having no excuses. Because it doesn't matter what environment he grew up in or however he got to this point, at this point, that has to be something that is stopped. There is no excuse for it. And now moving forward, it has to change. But I do hear what you're saying about if some of his habits and lifestyle decisions aren't changing, then what is happening, like you said, like is it a safety issue to the public, right? I mean, yeah, that's something that needs to be followed up on moving forward.
And then the last thing from today, because we listened to Tom Ricketts speak.
Sure.
What was the reaction from you and or the Cubs media when he says they're out of baseball money? Because there was a nervous laugh in the press conference, and then he just kind of kept going. What was the reaction to that?
Yeah, almost like a scoff, right?
Yes.
Because I think that's really difficult for people to digest when you know the team is worth $3 billion some dollars, right? And the thing I think that I was sitting there wondering is he mentioned over and over again the top five payroll. Why can't you be number one? The Yankees don't have a problem with it. If that's the route you want to go, you could be that, right? So I think,
and the time is now. Like that's the other thing. It's like when Bruce asks him about paying Baez and Bryant and Rizzo in the future, the counter argument is actually no. I'd rather you sign Bryce Harper now, and if that means that you don't re-sign an extra guy in 2022, then so be it. The whole point is to win as many championships with this core group of players as possible.
So you're in the group of people who basically would say that the idea of saving money for all these guys in the future is really a bad excuse.
Yeah, I don't want them to sign Wilson Contreras in his 30s or Rizzo in his mid 30s or Bryant. You know what I mean? Maybe
that's a fair take.
Yeah, like we'll see. We'll see which one of those guys are worth re-signing. But I know when they're all in their mid 20s that it's the championship window right now. Chris Bryant's going to be a free agent when he's 30. Bryce Harper's 26. Like, you tell me which one of those guys is more valuable.
Absolutely. So I think that I'm trying to remember how he exactly stated it, but it was something about, like, you know, the flexibility for the future or something like this. But so many people are thinking exactly like you are in terms of fans of this team are thinking it's not the future we're thinking about. We're thinking about the here and the now and the window and the guys we have. So why is it not an investment put in the money for a Bryce Harper right now or a Manny Machado? And I see that side of the argument. I absolutely do. And really, if it hadn't been for the emails, that's your headline today, right? That should have been the headline. But we were listening and hearing a lot about the emails first and foremost, rightfully so. So I don't know. I kind of, honestly, Danny, I felt as though, to use the word again and circle back with it here, I thought it was rather uncomfortable for Tom Ricketts in this afternoon. And that's not to say he didn't come across like he always does, where he's very poised up there. But I didn't think it was easy for him to do. And oftentimes I watch him and think, oh, this was easy. It was easy for him to come in here and talk about this and talk about all the great things that are going on. I thought today it looked difficult and challenging for him. So
understandably again, so.
Yeah, second press conference in a row of things that, you know, are hard to talk about. And these guys are having to stand up there and own it, as they said. They're having to own something that is not a proud moment for either.
Kelly Kroll, fantastic stuff. Thank you for being very generous with your time. And again, happy belated birthday.
Thank you so much. I expect to hear you guys singing when I come home. And you can do it for me, okay?
Oh, you don't want that.
Next year.
You've heard both of us. You don't want any part of that.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, guys.
That's Kelly Kroll from NBC Sports Chicago. Very talented reporter, jumping from Bulls right into Cubs and then back and forth. And she's right. It was uncomfortable. Tom Ricketts is a billionaire. Doesn't make it easy to answer a line of questions of, hey, did you know that your dad was racist?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not a comfortable line of questioning.
Well, it's not a questionable or not a comfortable line of questioning. And then the answers that some expect are just so unrealistic of, yeah, that's his father he's speaking of. He's not going to go out and completely torch his father, who's responsible, whose money that got the Ricketts family, the Cubs.
Of course.
Like, it puts everyone in such a strange and weird spot, and it's, yeah, uncomfortable, perfect way to describe it, because being in press conferences like that, yes, 100%, that's the way those kind of things feel.
I did enjoy when he was asked if the conversations about Sinclair's political bent had ever come up, and he said not at all. It's like, that can't be true, because you're too good at business to not have at least known that reputation was out there about someone that you're getting into a huge business deal with.
Right.
That's not true.
I don't buy that one quite there, Tom.
Let's shift to the other team in town and how all conversational roads keep coming back to someone who isn't here. It's McNeil and Parkins with Shep in on the Score.
You got a player in the Manny caliber. They're going to bring a lot to the table. You know, it goes on for a lot of players in this league, where, you know, whether it's Bryce Harper or Manny or whoever's still out there of that caliber, you know, they're going to, you know, you're getting an absolute stud.
That was John Jay. He's a member of the White Sox.
He is. He's going to wear number 45, too. It's coming out of retirement for MJ.
I don't like that.
What?
I don't like it.
Big Carlos Lee fan, were you?
Huge. No one asked me, and my opinion could not matter any less on this or any other issue, but eh.
You don't give up Carlos Lee and Michael Jordan Sox numbers.
It'll,
no.
It'll always
the
be
guy
Michael
that
Jordan
you traded and directly won a World Series largely because of trading, or Michael Jordan for that historic run in a Sox uniform.
That's right. Michael Jordan.
He had the double that he hit like 110 feet at Wrigley Field in that exhibition game.
Yeah, past a non-professional third baseman, Les was telling me last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it was off of Dave Otto, if I remember correctly.
That is correct. The bottom of the hour on the Score, brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Wall Street Ryan Arena this season for games against Minnesota and Ohio State. Tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. So all conversational roads about the White Sox seem to continue to come back to the guy who isn't here, but they have fully reported to camp too. And, you know, there's stories, you know, Rick Renteria today said that don't be surprised if you see Yoan Moncada at third base on opening day. Well, okay, that means it's not going to be Manny Machado.
Right.
And then it's like, but then he's Moncada's going to get plenty of work at short, and they're going to do all these sorts of things. So, okay. But everyone is still waiting to see if they're going to be able to land the big fish. It's just, it's a different type of distraction that's hovering over everything, and it's a much better one. Like, hey, maybe they'll sign this generational talent and make the biggest acquisition in franchise history, but it is still a weird thing that it feels to me anyway, as someone who's just reading, you know, James Fegan and all that stuff, it's like, just like there's always that mention of, but you know, everything would change with these projections if they sign Manny Machado. It's just like this parenthetical thing next to any White Sox conversation of, oh yeah, by the way, they might sign a guy for $280 million any day now.
Yeah, it's just such a weird thing because even like there's that part of it of, all right, well, yeah, the roster will look like this and the opening day starting lineup will look like this. But if you add Manny Machado, then all of a sudden Tim Anderson's not playing shortstop and he's moving to second base and Moncada moves from second to third and all of the trickle-down effect of all of it. And then it's like even a weird situation of like the locker that they have waiting for Manny Machado is still there. So you walk into the clubhouse if you're a member of the 40-man roster, you walk in each day and you're like, well, there's that literal hole in the locker that's just kind of sitting there and maybe it'll be a megastar in this games or maybe it'll just sit vacantly for the rest of spring training. Like it's just a weird cloud kind of hanging over the whole camp for the Sox right now.
Well, and then the recent news, and I struggle to even call it news in the loosest definition of the term, because it's a hot stove rumor in an offseason where there has been no hotness to the stove, is that the Padres are willing to spend big money because the signing bonus that they give Manny Machado won't be taxed.
Because
he lives in Florida, but they're in California, and so they can offer him more money for the tax loophole, but he doesn't want to play on the West Coast, so he's holding out for another team. And Bryce Harper now is going to get the more than $300 million from the Nationals, and that's probably going to be the Phillies, but once he signs, then Machado can sign. It's odd. Everything about the reporting around this is odd. Let's check in with our Sox fans. Shane Reardon, who is in your chair today, he's been scouring all of the interwebs. He's reported Manny Machado to the White Sox.
Yeah, he's been doing that since, I think, the last game of the World Series last year.
Since we brought
Much
the sign.
Much farther back than that. I've confirmed both Bryce Harper and Manny Machado to the White Sox many times.
It's a great Twitter follow. You should get in there.
No,
Great might be a little strong.
It's a Twitter follow.
It's like an interview that's done with a Star Trek legend.
That's right. It's a thing that happened. And then there's our guy Chris Tannehill, who is convinced that this is all just a long con to punch him in the gut.
Yeah, like life itself. Yeah, this is part of that.
Yeah.
It's the narrative.
Okay, so where are you guys at now? Do you think you're getting Manny Machado?
I'm burning with anxiety. I want him to go. I don't even care.
It has nothing to do with
anymore.
Manny Machado, by the way. Shane, that's just Shane every day.
That's the responses on Tinder.
Sadly, he's not actually on fire, I can report. Sorry, everyone out there.
Devastating.
I apologize. Oh, now okay. He's sleeping.
Oh, come on.
Oh, Shane's upset.
Content factor over here. Can't take it.
Sensitive Shane.
He sits in the big chair one day.
I'm
can't
the sensitive
take it.
One. Here we go.
Let's
yes,
do it.
I am extremely anxious, and I just want a step forward for my organization. The organization that I've dedicated 26 years of rotten fandom to, that paid off once. It paid off once.
All right. It paid off once.
Like, they've taken a step in the right direction, though. Whether Machado's a member of the Sox in 2019 or not. Like, you think if they lose off on Machado, they haven't taken a step to you?
I mean, they've taken a step in developing young prospects, but that's not a guarantee. You have
I know it's not a guarantee, but it's like
Machado, the best pure hitter in baseball right now, in my opinion, in terms of contact, in terms of power, in terms of all of it, the best pure hitter in baseball. And I understand you're not supposed to negotiate against yourself. And if the reported number is $175 million, you're not going to up the offer without another confirmed offer. You're not going to do that. But if we find out that Manny Machado didn't come here, even with the highest offer on the table because he didn't want to play in Chicago, then that's not a step forward. I don't care what you've done with your farm system. It's not a step forward if Manny Machado doesn't come here because he doesn't want to play in Chicago.
Well, I agree with that because the only thing – we also don't know how much anyone's developed in the offseason other than we just assume that we assign development to them because of time.
Well, like they're just older. Like the Sox are coming off a year where a lot of their top-tier prospects, like Luis Robert, played, what, 15 games or something last year when he returned and then got hurt again. Like, it's a huge year for him coming off of multiple injuries. Burgers. What's his name? Missed all of last year with the Achilles. Then
the Kopech, obviously.
Yes, like that part of it. Like, it was a bad year injury-wise, and you throw Kopech into that discussion as well of, all right, finally makes his debut in the big leagues, and 3 weeks later, he's on the shelf for a year and a couple weeks as well. So it's a huge year in terms of that. I just have trouble thinking, like, it's that much of a step back. All right, the Sox haven't shown winning at the major league level, but it's a plan that's being put in place. When's the last time they had a plan like this? Early 90s?
I totally
late
80s? Agree with the plan. The
like
plan is awesome.
I get it. It's like, I get why Sox fans would be upset of, yep, didn't land the big fish, but it's like you're going after an elite superstar in this game, and I have trouble selling the organization short because, all right, you didn't land Manny Machado. Like, Manny Machado, I get it. The Padres, the discussion with that will be, okay, they're a team built mostly on the farm as well. But I don't know. I have trouble like getting upset and thinking the Sox are like getting set back in time if Machado is not a member of this team.
I think it's very easy to knock the White Sox if they don't land one of them. You should have come in with an original higher offer than you did. You should not have taken any chance in not having a high offer that Manny Machado would accept right off the bat at the beginning of the free agency period. You tried to lowball because the market was low because you thought you could steal him. That leaves a bad taste in players' mouths.
Do you think they're going to get him?
No.
Tanny?
Yes, I do.
Whoa.
Nice.
No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, that's the first time you said that.
I think the Yankees still. I'm gonna stick to that. Why I change now? I mean, you know, how are they lowballing him if they have the highest offer on the table? I mean, that if what we're hearing is true, if those reports are true, how is that lowballing?
Because
that,
it's not his value. It's not his value. He's
it's all a baseball, though. Yeah. Like, your value is what you get paid.
So that's a problem with baseball, then.
It's like a baseball card. But, yeah, the Beckett can say that it's worth this, but if someone's only going to give you $5, then it's only worth $5.
But it doesn't matter. It's a problem, then, with baseball. Because Manny Machado...
Well, it's not with the White Sox.
It's not a White Sox problem.
You can call it collusion if you want. I mean, you can certainly make a case for it, but like, it's not the White Sox fault. I mean, they set the market, right?
Right. If that's the high bid right now, yes.
Fine. He's worth more money. He should get more money than $175 million. Your first offer should be more than $175 million.
Well, and I assume that he will get more money.
Yeah, I think, yeah, this is all part of it. Like, they had to know that, you know, someone was going to swoop in like the Padres last minute and try to really, you know, make a great offer for him. It's, you know, this is part of it. I mean, the Sox, from what I know, they haven't had to up their offer. Like, their offer has been their offer. Now someone else has come to the table with a serious offer. You know, Yankees seem to be out of the picture at this point. So the Sox know, okay, now we'll have to pay a little bit more than we thought. You know, at this part, it's negotiating. You know, you're like, what are you going to do?
Right, okay, so but full squads are there. Spring training's underway. How much do you guys feel like it's hovering over everything? Because with these other teams that are on the mix, it's not hovering over everything the Yankees do. They're the Yankees. They've got a team that's ready to compete. For the White Sox, it's this signing changes the reputation of the franchise in some ways. It's the biggest signing in franchise history. He'd be the best player on the team. He'd be in his prime. Your win expectation would go up 6-7 wins immediately. Like, it'd be a huge landmark historical thing if it actually happens on the South side. So it feels to me, as just the neutral observer who just reads everything, that everything's in a holding pattern until this guy signs, which we have no idea when the hell it's going to be.
It's a giant storm cloud hanging over the organization, wondering when it's going to happen. But here's what I'm saying with his value. You're telling me that if the White Sox came and offered Manny Machado $250 million, and that was their first offer, $260 million, you don't think he would have accepted that?
No,
because again,
not at all.
Like I said, I think Bryce Harper is the case we have to look at in this whole scenario. I think that's the first domino that's going to fall. It's the biggest name, the most marketable player with the most, you know, known agent, you know, the most experience. And I think that's the first thing. Until Bryce Harper signs somewhere, then we'll know where Machado's going to go with his deal. So I think that's the biggest thing in all this.
Maybe I'm just looking at it in too simple of terms that, hey, this
that
is a lot.
That would surprise me.
Wow. Okay.
See, this is what he does, Shane. He brings on the White Sox fan, quote unquote, then he belittles us.
No! I said him.
Just one of you. It's not a collective of us.
Your
it's
point
just
was
Shane.
Just very deep and
it's
multi-layered.
He's not belittling you. He's belittling management.
That's right.
He won't let us drink on the air today.
We're about to start drinking.
Oh, okay.
5 o'clock hour. We're gonna start drinking. Shane wanted us to drink it too.
No, I said hold off.
Oh, okay. Here we have your public stance is that right. You told us to hold off. All right. Well, coming up, we'll play this Rob Manfred stuff because the Players Union came in. And so, yeah, if baseball is being held hostage by these free agents, okay, fine. The White Sox are just a part of it. It's just a bigger deal to the White Sox than the majority of teams because of the historical significance for that franchise. So we'll hear from the commissioner with the player union response coming up on The Score.
So many free agents right now. That's what bothered me. You got so many free agents that could help multiple teams. And they're just sitting there, you know, and I'm sure that some of it's contractual, some of it's not. I mean, we got guys that are just literally looking for a job that can help teams. But when you don't have that many, when you don't have teams that want to be helped, I mean, it really limits your options. So something needs to change. Something needs to be fixed. I hope that Major League Baseball can look at this and say, okay, we need to address this competitiveness issue.
So that's Justin Verlander. Add him to the list of high-profile, established stars that have talked about this and taken issue with it. John Lester has talked about the embarrassment for baseball with all of these free agents unsigned. It's been going back multiple years. It happened last offseason, it happened this offseason, and baseball players are pissed. That's just it's not conjecture. Mm-hmm. Conjecture. The Players Association Executive Director is Tony Clark. He issued this statement today. Or actually, you know what? Let me play Rob Manfred first, and then I'll give the response.
I reject the notion, okay, that payroll is a good measure for how much a team is trying or how successful that team is going to be. Baseball has always been a cyclical business. People have gone through a cycle of building their teams by going young, husbanding their resources, and trying to get a group that comes together as a team in the quintessential team sport. And I just don't buy the idea that running around spending money is necessarily indicative of whether or not you're going to be successful on the field. Our teams are trying. Every single one of them wants to win. It may look a little different to outsiders because the game has changed, the way that people think about the game, the way that people think about putting a winning team together has changed, but that doesn't mean they're not trying. No meaningful change in the distribution of winning percentages in Major League Baseball. The assertion that teams aren't trying started last spring training with Tony Clark singling out four teams. Okay? He did very poorly with those four teams, right? One won 97 games, one won 90. The other one was a game above 500, I believe, Frank, right? Two games above 500, okay? So, you know, this narrative that our teams aren't trying is just not supported by the facts. Gee, why aren't the clubs signing players? I think there's lots and lots of offers out there, and it's a bilateral process. Players haven't accepted those offers yet. That's how a market works. So, you know, we bargain for a market system. That market's out there operating, and I don't have any choice but to live with that right now.
Yo, could he come across as any more condescending?
No kidding.
You got a tone issue there. That was so unnecessarily condescending.
Yeah, you want to tell me that the MLBPA and Tony Clark and company that we're not headed to a lockout or a work stoppage here in 2 years? You want to try to convince me the other way? Like when you have Rob Manfred on one side representing the owners and that's the hard stance that he's taking? It's ridiculous to me. Teams aren't tanking. Teams aren't doing... Are you kidding me? Last year we saw three teams in the American League alone that lost over 100 games, 100 or more games. In things like, and then you add in the teams that weren't interested in being competitive whatsoever. The Texas Rangers, the Miami Marlins lost 98 games. The Cincinnati Reds, now okay, they went and they made some moves this offseason, but they sure as heck weren't trying to win. Like, that's so much of this game right now. It's easy for them to say, yep, building for the future, and it's all about the farm system. Teams aren't spending, okay, like, yes, they are saying that it's going to be spent in the future, but it's not like the Oakland A's are putting money in reserves and they're going to spend an extra $30 million 2 years from now. It's not like the Tampa Bay Rays are going to go about it and do it that way.
Well, also, I mean, first of all, if you're saying that there's not a correlation between spending and winning, then why is there a luxury tax?
Sure.
Right? Just remove the luxury tax, allow people to freewheel and spend as much as they want without penalty, and my guess is the super teams, the richest teams, will just keep spending more money, and my guess is they'll continue to win.
Yeah, what
so
is it?
That argument's ridiculous.
Like the Royals won with a small market, small payroll. Who's the other example of recent note?
So like, the A's last year, you know,
they win at all. They were a wild card team that got bounced in one game.
Correct. Like, and it's clearly the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Your margin for error is much, 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 much narrower if you're not spending money. And that also is immaterial to the main point of, man, your system's broken. If you've got the owners' meetings and the GM meetings and free agency opens 100 days ago at this point, and literally the most marketable star in your game is a free agent at the youngest point you can possibly be a free agent in the sport of baseball, healthy, and he isn't signed, you've got a problem. Now, you can say that it's not the big problem and that there are offers out there for Bryce Harper and that it's a two-way street and he's holding up the rest of the market. You can try to shift that blame. Your system's broke, period. If two of the 15 best players in your sport who are free agents at 26 aren't signed for 100 days, your system is broken. The director of the Players Union, Tony Clark, responded to Rob Manfred's comments with this. Commissioner Manfred's latest comments and his attempts to shift blame and distract from the main issues are unconstructive and misleading at best. Players' eyes don't deceive them, and nor do fans. As players report to spring training and see respected veterans and valued teammates on the sidelines, they are rightfully frustrated by a two-year attack on free agency. Players commit to compete every pitch of every at-bat and every inning of every game, yet we're operating in an environment in which an increasing number of clubs appear to be making little effort to improve their rosters, compete for a championship, or justify the price of a ticket. Players have made a sincere attempt, to engage with clubs on their proposals to improve pace of play and enhance the game to appeal to fans. At the same time, we have presented wide-ranging ideas that value substance over seconds and ensure the best players are on the field every day. We believe these more substantive changes are imperative now, not in 2022 or 2025, but in 2019. We look forward to continuing to engage with MLB on changes that address substantive issues to benefit the fans, players, the 30 clubs, and the game of baseball as a whole. End quote. Yeah, it's getting ugly. It's getting ugly.
It's getting ugly, and it doesn't seem like it's heading to a good place. Now, I know that Tony Clark, he gave a lot of concessions the last time a deal was up with MLBPA between the players' union and the owners, and they conceded a lot. But, I mean, baseball has so many flaws right now in terms of it's awful. Over the weekend, news comes out because top prospect for the Blue Jays, top prospect in all of baseball, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., reports to camp, and the Blue Jays immediately say, he's going to be held in the minor leagues because, well, defense needs work. He's not going to start with a big league roster. It's like, yes, it's not new. This has happened for years and years. Chris Bryant's our example. Eloy is going to be the same thing for the Sox. Like, it's a problem in your sport when you're starting your season and your most talented and best players, not because of health, but because of contract issues, aren't allowed to play on opening day. Like, how is that good? How is that good for anyone?
It's not.
It's just good for owners because they get a year extra of control. That's the only person that it's good for. It's not good for baseball fans. It wasn't good in 2015 for baseball fans of the Cubs. Like, all right, I get to watch Mike Olt for 2 weeks instead of Chris Bryant. Like, that's really going to put the butts in the seats.
But comparatively, a guy missing 2 weeks for an extra year of service time is small to Bryce.
Sure.
Harper doesn't have a team.
Right.
Think about it. Like, sometimes you just got to say it out loud. Bryce Harper doesn't have a team.
Most marketable face in baseball, and by a wide margin.
And so a texter says, so Parkins, after X amount of days, you just have to pay them whatever they want? No, but the market
shouldn't ever get anywhere near the days.
Exactly. The market and demand for their services should be so robust that there is a quick negotiating window to the top, right? Free agency opens. There should be five teams immediately making the 10-year, $300 million offer that the Nationals made. Okay, time to go up. Who's willing to go up 10%? 3 years, 10 years, $330 million. X number of teams drop out. Okay, who's willing to go up 10%? X number of teams drop out. Okay, who's willing to go up 5%? The last team drops up. Boom, there we go. That's our contract.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take 100 days for Bryce Harper to not sign. It's embarrassing.
Manny Machado's been a free agent longer than he was a Los Angeles Dodger.
Right.
That's ridiculous to me.
That's stupid.
Like, you spend your entire offseason, all right, like, stories come out, all right, Machado's going to be close, something's going to happen. Like, no. And it doesn't feel like anything's going to happen for, I don't know, there's the Harper rumors, but I don't know, shake me, wake me when something actually goes down.
And how stupid are they going to all feel if he ends up getting the place where they could have gotten to right at the beginning anyway?
Right.
Saved himself the headache, had him in camp earlier, had an offseason with actual news and fun and ratings on the MLB network because people would have been tuned in. It's a fundamentally broken system. Tom Ricketts, though, says he doesn't have any more money for baseball. It's Mac and Parkins with Shep in on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.